All right, this meeting of the House Special Committee on Injury will come to order. It is now about 3:07. It's Tuesday, January 31st, 2012, and it is, I believe, day 15. We are here at the Ramona Barnes Room at the Alaska Capitol. Present are Representative Tutte, Representative Lynn, Representative Peterson, Representative Sadler, Co-Chair Foster, and myself, Representative Pruitt. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. I'd ask everyone that you have your cell phones, smartphones turned off as they disrupt the sound systems. And before we get going, I do want to make a, you know, public thank you to Representative Keller. The loud noise from today's gavel came from Representative Keller. He does these, and I really want to thank him publicly. It's kind of fun. Asked him if he could make a gavel, and he did. He does that kind of on his own. So it's great to know the talents that we have right here in our own legislature. So today we're going to hear HB 250. It is extending the Renewable Energy Grant Fund by Representative Thomas. I would entertain a motion to adopt a CS that we do have before us, which everyone should have. It's version D.
Mr. Chairman, I would move adopting as work draft for a CS for HB 250 and version 27-LS1060/D for Delta.
And I will object for the purposes of discussion.
All right. My understanding is that the only change that we have here on the CS is it would change the longevity of the fund from 10 years to 5 years. The changes will occur on line 7. You'll see it should see it there where it says 2018 instead of 2023.
Line 10?
You're right.
Okay.
Line 10.
It's 7 for the 5 years.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Any discussion by anyone on the change? If there is none, do you remove your objection on the adoption?
Remove my objection.
Okay. Any other objections? Seeing none, we will go ahead and work off of the CS for HB 250, which is the version D, which is before us. I believe we have Casey Schroeder from Representative Thomas's office here to present the bill. Please come forward, identify yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Casey Schroeder Hotch, staff to Representative Thomas. House Bill 250 reauthorizes the Renewable Energy Grant Fund for another 5 years. Established in 2008, the fund has funded about 200 projects across the state, focusing on areas where the cost of energy is high. More and more projects come online each year, and at the end of 2011, 21 projects were online. By 2013, it is estimated that the fund will be responsible for displacing 6 million gallons of diesel fuel each year. House Bill 250 also includes a continuation of the intent language that was expressed in 2008 to fund the program at $50 million a year for the duration of the fund. With that, I can try to answer any questions you might have. I'd also like to point out that we are graced with the presence of Sarah Fisher Goad and Peter Krimp from AEA, and they can answer any program-specific questions that the committee might have.
Great. Any questions for Casey? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Casey, I have a little bit of familiarity with the fund. I'm going to ask you, even though the data may be in here, if you could point out what kinds of projects have not yet been funded. I understand there's been evolution, the kind of work that's been proposed and funded through this, but what is there an unserved kind of project?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I'd like to defer that to AEA, okay, since they are the experts on that.
Okay. And I would probably suspect that many of the questions will probably be related to the actual how the fund operates itself. Yeah. So if there are any for Casey.
I do have one for you.
Okay, Representative Sadler, and then we will ask if the members of ABA would prepare to come up. We'll ask you up here shortly. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. You're on the hot seat. We should make you sweat a little bit. In reading through the program evaluations status report, there was reference to plans to have Vermont Energy Investment Corporation do a report, a third-party review, and that is going to produce that by March 2012. Would it be the sponsor, Representative Thomas's desire to get this passed out as fast as possible, or would you mind waiting to see what the results of that report would be before proceeding with passage?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, the sponsor would like to get this moving as fast as possible because we do have to go over into the Senate, and March will probably come before the bill actually passes. So.
Okay. And they could always see the results of that report in that side before. Okay, good deal.
Yeah.
Good question, though. Well, Casey, if you wouldn't mind just taking a back seat for a moment, we'll ask the members of AEA. Don't run too far in case there are any future questions. Ms. Fisher-Goad, if you and Mr. Crimp would please put yourselves on the record, and if we need Representative Sadler to restate the question, we can. Otherwise, go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Sarah Fisher-Goad, Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority.
Peter Crimp, Deputy Director, AEA.
Representative Sadler, would you go ahead and repeat the question actually for our recorder so that...
Okay, for sure. The question is, Sarah, through the chair, is there an unserved population of projects? And I'm going to do some background before I ask that question. I guess has the level or kind or scope of projects evolved over time? Have they gotten more complicated or more focused or more general? I'm just kind of curious to find out what kinds of projects would be likely to be funded as the program went to a renewal period.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, one focus has been toward developing heat energy projects that provide thermal energy. The Renewable Energy Fund Advisory Committee has given us that direction to emphasize those projects quite clearly. There is a large potential for development of wood-fired boiler systems or district heating systems in particularly rural areas that are economically beneficial, fairly easy to get off the ground, but there are a lot of them. So we've taken a bit of a programmatic approach. In the same way, heat recovery systems, waste heat recovery systems that use the diesel, and sometimes both diesel and wood heat. So that's an area that I think in round five we've seen a substantial increase in the numbers of proposals as well as the recommendations in that area. In terms of other technologies, generally speaking, the program has shied away from new technologies, that is developing emerging technologies, because they're riskier, and we feel that the bread and butter of the projects that actually have a good payback are technically less risky. There are plenty of them to keep us busy. And I guess I should mention that today AEA released the request for proposals for the Emerging Energy Technology Fund, which provides kind of an outlet for the newer technologies.
Okay. Follow up.
Yeah. I guess. Have the quality of the proposals gotten any better? Not the efficiency, or just the technical? Are people?
Yes. We feel that through the chair, we have. People have adopted the process, phased approach to the process, which is first involves reconnaissance or pre-feasibility analysis, then feasibility, full feasibility and conceptual design, final design and permitting, and then the last is construction. Potentially, it's a waste of money to proceed to final design without fully scoping out the project and coming up with good designs. It's fairly cheap compared to spinning wheels. I think we have seen a good phased approach, and that's particularly important in hydroelectric projects, which have a lot of permitting and money spent in geotechnical, et cetera, that could be wasted if they're not directed properly.
My last question, if I could just kind of along that lines.
Go ahead, follow up.
Characterize how you think the program would operate over the next renewal period, next 7 years, if and when this is renewed. Just generally, what do you see being different or the same? How's that for a general question?
Through the chair, I'll take a stab at that one. I think, as Peter had mentioned, that we've seen an evolution of the project and project applicants. We've seen come in for the next phase of funding. I think what we started to see in round five with respect to some of the construction projects is that there may be some larger dollar amount projects. And if everybody received the round five funding recommendations this last week, and there were a couple recommendations for projects of greater dollar value. We have raised the caps from the $2 million for lower cost areas and $4 million for higher cost areas to $4 million and $8 million, respectively. So one thing that we do see is maybe a little bit more difficulty or the regional spreading that's required in the statute could be a bit difficult as we look at, potentially funding one project that would meet that regional spreading. So, that is one area as they evolve. If as the projects get a little bit bigger, that's one area that we may have a bit of difficulty working through some of the regional spreading. But I think in general, I think we'll continue to see the same types of projects, and also the applicants and the applications becoming more familiar with the program. We have the ability to change the RFA a bit and focus on particular technology, but at this point I don't see us doing anything different than what Peter had already mentioned with respect to really trying to emphasize the heat recovery and heat projects and not just electricity, because I think that's a little bit of a misunderstanding with the program, that it's not just for electrical generation, that this is a program that heat projects are eligible.
Thank you both.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In this last round, what was the total request amounts, and what was the total that was awarded?
Through the chair, $132,900,000 was requested for round five.
$132.
And then the recommended AEA recommended amount was $43 million.
Thank you. And one more question.
Please, Representative Foster.
Thank you. What kind of feedback have you received regarding the program in terms of ways to improve it? And do you have any suggestions on anything that we can do to help make it a better program?
I think, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, that one of the reasons that we wanted to have a third-party contractor come in and look at the program is to help us look at these questions. How can we improve the program? And I guess one thing that we've talked about is I guess I'm a little I'm not quite sure how to with the. It's a nice question to have, and I'm feeling like I should have been prepared to answer that a bit better, Mr. Chairman. I think we need to make sure that people understand that this program exists, and make sure that they understand that that this program is available for projects. So I guess that's one issue, and I think you hit right on the head with respect to what we expect out of our contract with Vermont Energy is to really look at how we can change the program or improve the program. And, with respect to how that fits in with the legislation moving, there's, I believe, things that we can do within the context of the program statutorily. Now we can make some adjustments. We have this flexibility through the RFA process. There could be recommendations on that. There could be recommendations that aren't statutory recommendations on just how we may better be able to either provide outreach for the program. One thing that's come up is technical assistance has been a very big concern, especially in rural communities and rural applicants, on making sure that we can provide the technical assistance for them to provide good applications and good projects into the program. And so we are working with another deputy director is the deputy director of rural energy, and we are looking at how to kind of marry the technical assistance that we have with our RPSU program and incorporating what alternative energy or renewable energy programs or projects that may fit nicely into that model and have AEAB maybe a bit more involved in those types of projects.
Just to follow up on that, yeah, in my last, I'm glad that you brought that up. That is an issue out in rural Alaska in terms of just having that expertise and the technical wherewithal to apply for these. And so appreciate your work on that. Thank you.
Thanks. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. After recommending to appropriate the $43 million, what's the current balance left in the energy fund, renewable energy fund?
Through the chair,
And while you're doing that, Representative Bolson has joined us.
I think, through the chair, Representative Peterson, $176 million has been appropriated to the program. We've disbursed approximately $80 million of the appropriated dollars. And then with the question was after the $43 million, I'm sorry, what would be then the...
What's the balance?
The balance at that point. Can you do the quick math? 176 minus 43?
Minus 43.
53.
No, it would be about 90 million has not been spent yet.
Yeah.
90 million.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Representative Pratt.
On the fiscal note, I see that AEA is allowed to take up to $2 million of the interest holdings. Mm-hmm. And it looked like at one time the fiscal notes were $226,000 for the first year, $155,000 for every subsequent year after that. And then most recently, it looked like that the actual costs of administrating these energy grant funds jumped up to $1.2 million. Were you able to absorb those costs through other receipts coming in, or did you have to get supplemental appropriations, or how were you able to, and what was the cause of it going up so high?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, the original fiscal note when the bill passed was, you may recall when the legislation originally passed, there wasn't a tie into the dollar amount. I don't think the $50 million and then the subsequent $100 million solicitation was anticipated when the legislation originally had passed. And that fiscal note was originally established, and I'm working from memory on this, was to establish a program. I think the intent on actually doing the management of the projects, and we have over 208 active projects right now. The intent had been at the time to use the appropriations in the fund to do that. So the original fiscal note was really just to establish the baseline of the program. And so the actual costs of managing the program had been adjusted by having a separate appropriation come up to use the interest earnings of the fund in order for us to manage it. And it's not just managing the projects that have been funded. It's also managing the economic firms and the support that we have through ISER in order to evaluate the program and evaluate the projects that come in under application. And then Peter can discuss, I think, some of the other things that we use those dollars for.
And please state your name again, since we're switching back and forth.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Peter Crimp, Deputy Director of Alternative Energy and Energy Efficiency at AEA. I think Sarah stated it pretty well.
as time has gone on, we've been managing more projects, and AEA management of projects is active. That is, we establish milestones, we review the conceptual designs, the final designs. We accept them. We don't approve them. Generally speaking, there'll be a licensed engineer who are designing the projects. There are just kind of the due diligence of running the funds through and contacting the day-to-day, getting on grantees, reminding them when projects are due, writing letters saying that projects appear not to be moving forward, and AEA is going to need to de-obligate the funds, the kind of back and forth. And then a significant amount of accounting. These are on cost reimbursable basis. We have an accounting section that goes over each and every invoice that comes in to make sure it's appropriate and eligible costs, et cetera. All the normal oversight of projects.
Follow up, Representative Todd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I see that for the fiscal year 2012, you're expected to go up to $1.6 million, which is another $800,000. Is $2 million going to be enough to cover this over the next 5 years? Looks like the costs are going up pretty substantially.
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, I think the what we are seeing is the peaking of the total number of projects that we would be managing, because you know what's happened is that projects come in the door and they're managed, and then more projects come in right behind them. But at a certain point, there are projects that are done and they're closed. So I think we should be seeing a leveling off. And for us, our best estimate at this point is that the up to the $2 million is sufficient to manage the program and pay for our administrative costs to manage the program. So I appreciate that question, because we do think about that quite regularly. Is that going to be enough? But at this point, I we have no better information in the 2 years that we've used this interest to make that determination. So we're very comfortable with the appropriation that has been used for the last couple of years.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it sounds like you guys have a lot of contracts that are out right now to help evaluate, to help look at things. Do you see that growing as well, or do you think that as this program continues, that there may not be a need for it? Or how do you see that? What do you see in the future for contracts and having to let out more contracts for this? And I'm not talking about contracts for the projects themselves, but contracts and overview and reviewing and so on and so forth.
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, I think for the evaluation of the projects, we'll always need a bank of economists to look at the projects. And I think that process has worked very well. I think where we may, I don't know if it's, well, it could potentially be contract work, but I think with respect to some of the technical assistance that I think that folks are looking at us to provide, we may have to do some more upfront outreach and evaluation on the technical assistance side. I could see us, one thing to do is potentially have some type of a workshop with potential applicants, for example, to make sure that that they, understand the application process and make sure that they can put in the best application. So, those are some of the, and whether we would have contractual help for something like that, for training, that's a possible cost. But at this point, besides the economists, I'm not sure that I would see any other help unless we needed some type of subject matter expertise that we don't have internally to AEA.
Another question, Representative Tuck.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see that looks like that we're on this last year, we have about, I think you said $43 million that were awarded. Is that correct? Recommended? Oh, recommended. I thought it was 132 applications, so 43 that's recommended. And can you give us some reasons why people don't make it all the way through the process? What are some of the common reasons why they won't be selected?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, I actually did a bit of an analysis this last time around, because about two-thirds of the projects AEA did recommend against. For the most part, AEA recommended against the projects, and I would say it's probably 80% or so plus, because projects were not ready to move ahead within the time frame such that the funds would be spent within that time frame. We are very cognizant of the potential for banking money for projects, and our feeling is that the public is best served by making the money work within the soonest or the closest time frame as possible. So I would say that's a big one. There are other miscellaneous reasons, such as technical and feasibility or economics being very poor, that sort of those sorts of reasons.
And is there a follow-up?
I won't follow up.
Okay.
And I got to throw it in. But I know that you're focusing on heat projects and heat recovery, heat producing. Does any of this money ever go to hydro projects?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, we love hydro projects. And whenever we see a hydro project that's ready to roll, we're ready to fund it, a good hydro project.
Okay, thank you very much.
Appreciate sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Sarah, looking at the background material, it said that this has leveraged a fair amount of federal money. Any estimation as to how much money has been matched or how much you have leveraged with the money been spent so far through these grants?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I think we're going to have to get back to the committee on that specific dollar amount. And unfortunately, I don't think we have that with us
okay.
at this point.
And a follow-up, kind of related, but this is $50 million over 5 years, $250 million. That's about as far as I got in math. But that's a reasonable chunk of money for a lot of rural alternative energy, which is great. Had you assessed what the impact would be on the and a reduced need for power cost equalization funding in the future from this? Do you guys have any correlative studies?
For the chair, Representative Sadler, AEA has just begun. I did a very quick analysis of impact on PCE on a couple of communities, and I'd be happy to forward that to the committee. It was based on partial energy production in the year 2011. I think a recurrent theme is that for construction projects, although we have 21 that are up and running, what you need is, generally speaking, and this is often true for just plain old diesel projects too, you need a year or two of operation such that the bugs can be eliminated from the system, and so such that you can get good data. However, we have been collecting data and on operation, and we did publish that in the program status report that we provided to you. In terms of rate impact, that gets to be a more difficult question, because one needs to look at operation and maintenance costs, the debt service cost, the individual utility, versus the cost of diesel. But we did give a shot on that, and I will provide that.
That'd be great. Even a thumbnail back the envelope calculation would be good.
And I think I probably just need to clarify that the $250 million won't all be for rural. There is a rural, and there is some money that goes into urban. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that's a very important point. There is there are a lot of projects that are going into the southeast and in the rail belt, and in terms of the impact, a couple of large ones that will be feeling the effects of within the next 2 years are Golden Valley Electric's Eva Creek Wind project, as well as the Anchorage landfill to gas project. So those are big ones. Sarah handed me, and I'd forgotten we had brought it with us, for the impact of PCE on PCE, and I can just provide some summary on that now, if you'd like.
A summary would be, I think, probably appreciated. Do you have something that you'd like to add to that
just
question?
Just a leave-in question, I guess, to that.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that is PCE, the formula that determines the price, is the, I think it's like an average of certain communities. And maybe if you can kind of touch on that. And if you happen to know what that number is, if you could let us know. And thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the PCE rate, I used to be able to memorize this and rattle it off really quickly. I have to get back up to speed on this one. The three communities that make up the base rate, which is the minimum amount for PCE, is Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Juneau. So it's a weighted average rate of the residential ratepayers in those communities. And right now that floor for the program is 13, I believe it's over 13 cents a kilowatt hour. I think it's 13.42 cents a kilowatt hour. The formula of the program is 95% of the allowable cost between a dollar and that base rate. And so it's 95% of the difference between $1 and then the base rate. Unless a community that's PCE eligible, or excuse me, a utility that's PCE eligible is rate-based, then it's that rate that they charge less the base. So there is a couple different ways that the formula that they evaluate the PCE rate. With the intention of being anybody in a PCE community, their rate less their PCE level would bring them to close to that base rate of 13.42 cents per kilowatt hour for those 500 kilowatt hours a month.
Thank you. And if you wouldn't mind summarizing, please.
Sure. I'll just give a few representative figures. We looked at impact of 13 projects that were in operation for much of the year. However, only a subset are power projects, which are in PCE communities. And of those, we had four that were fit that bill. Gustavus Electric's Falls Creek Hydro Project was one of them, and that's in Gustavus. The savings to the impacts on PCE customers, for PCE customers, that brought down the cost of power by about 1.5 cents per kilowatt hour. Not that much. For PC ineligible customers, it brought down the cost by about 28 cents per kilowatt hour.
Was that second one?
28 cents per kilowatt hour.
For whom?
For ineligible customers, such as commercial facilities. And that gets to the point that the PCE program would, of course, dampen benefits since it's already providing a subsidy to customers in the first place. Another interesting for Gustavus, another interesting point was, though, that the program put back into the PCE committee, kitty, approximately $172,000. That is, this would be reduced because the price of power was brought down, less PCE was required for Gustavus. So the beneficiaries would be a little bit for the PCE customers, a lot for the non-PCE eligible customers, and then the third, a lot for the PCE program itself. That is, putting money back into the PCE kitty for redistribution elsewhere.
Is there already, how much money was Gustavus specifically? You were saying the 176 that was back into PCE. How much was spent to get us to that point? And is that's a yearly figure, I would estimate, the 176 is?
I think I calculated this just based on using the formula that Sarah had brought and based on an earlier PCE year. So this is more representative. It can't be – it's close.
Right, and I you're right. I was just making – is there any way to understand the – and you might not have that figure in front of you, how much we had spent in the Gustavus that got us that 176. You might not have it.
I think we need to
okay.
to give you – probably be easier just provide a succinct table that would give the info on it.
Okay. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was clarified. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Question that I have is related to the way that the program, the focus on the administrators. Is the focus to start a program and see it all the way through, or is there a focus in, because one of the concerns I had heard from some of the management and the different powers groups around or associations, whereas is there a lot of the smaller utilities, it's not very, it can bankrupt them if, let's say, they go and they find a source, a water source, and they want to test it to see if there's potentially an opportunity to invest there, create some sort of eventual energy source, if they test it and they find out that it doesn't work out well for them, whereas in a larger utility that might not be the case. Are we helping them really find out if certain sources of energy are going to work, and then kind of moving on and going to something else, and then allowing them to then come to the table and say and bring funding, and or are we seeing it from the beginning, and usually do we see it all the way through to the end?
I think, Mr. Chairman, I think you're touching on a lot of this stuff. I appreciate the question because you touch on a lot of the stuff that Peter and I and Sandra talk about quite a bit with respect to, you know, the programs. I think this is where we have to take maybe a step backwards and talk about kind of the energy pathway and then our efforts with regional planning on looking at what should be done in regions and communities for impacting their costs of energy. And so, I mean, I look at the Renewable Energy Fund as has been a very effective tool and has produced some very, very good projects and, you know, we have some communities that have benefited tremendously from the program. There are some areas that may not have a particular good renewable resource to use that could be developed in order to help, you know, to impact them to the maximum benefit that they can. But there are other programs that AEA manages that, you know, that are there to kind of help kind of round out that picture as far as, I guess, seeing it from beginning to end. And that's, again, you know, like the renewable or the RPSU program, where, you know, for a community to have good, reliable, as low as cost possible power would be through an RPSU program. And the Denali Commission and AEA have built, we've used a lot of federal funding, and the state has provided significant funding for us to work on making sure that rural communities have a good powerhouse. And in certain circumstances, there may be an opportunity to have wind integrated into that system, and we can have a good wind diesel system. And then that portion of that that project could be funded through the Renewable Energy Fund program. So there are circumstances where end-use efficiency and demand-side management may be the most effective, and generally that's where you want to start anyways, is that we should be looking and making sure that our systems are run as efficiently as possible are managed that way, that we, you know, take care of the demand side of the system and have a very efficient powerhouse system. And that's kind of the way that these powerhouses have been set up through this Denali Commission program, is a way to manage the load with a bank of generators, where you're not always running your biggest generator in a community. You have a bank of generators where you can have your small generator running when that's all you need to run. So it is kind of a bit more of a holistic approach, where I think the Renewable Energy Fund has played a very important role on kind of helping round out that picture and being able to establish good renewable projects. But it's perhaps for many communities and areas, it's not going to be the end-all answer. Again, it's not, as we find out a lot in working on regional plans and working on the energy program development, there's not a real just one silver bullet answer for a community or a region.
Can I follow up on that with does the fund just look at the creating the energy source, or does it also, do we take into account that in some cases the source may not be right next to the community and we have to create some sort of transmission? Is that all included and potentially paid for by this fund?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, yeah, transmission lines from rural or from renewable projects are an eligible project on their own from the fund.
Oh, so they can be completely, they can be submitted separately from the actual energy project itself?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, yes, the an example of that the Reynolds Creek Hydro project in Prince of Wales Island. That required transmission as well as the hydro project. Also on Prince of Wales Island, however, there was an extension of the existing grid to Nockaty and Kaufman, which takes them off of diesel. And that was a project in its own funded under the RE fund.
Okay. And give anyone else questions before I ask? Okay. Can't even think the question I was thinking of. Are there any other questions related to the fund that anyone has for AEA before I bring in some people from public testimony?
I would ask one more, but sure.
Yeah, please, Representative Sadler.
Sir, can you know how many people are involved in at AEA in this program, either in reviewing the grants or the committee? But just how much personnel is devoted to this?
Take a break. Sure. Three reviewers, probably all told 10 reviewers, because we have subject matters in biomass, hydro, et cetera. Then 10 reviewers, but then in addition to that, two staff at ICER and
ICER,
UAA, yep. Institute of Social Economic Research, and then the probably economists, which are contractors, probably on the order of 10. And so that's a pulse effort for a 2-month period or so.
And that's all covered by that by the 1.2, not a 1.6. And you don't do not anticipate the need for more staff or personnel services?
At this point, no. We think one point is that I think we're getting better. We're getting more efficient on our system. And
how do you measure that?
Yes. Through the chair, that is a question that we are very interested in, and that is one of the reasons that we've contracted with the Vermont Energy Investment Corporation. We would like to know how to do it better and how to be more responsive.
Good answer.
Thank you.
Yeah. What are the top reasons that we would find, or the main reasons that we would find that someone would be rejected in their request?
Again, that would. Mr. Chair, likely not being ready, not have done the homework, the earlier stages of development, not being having completed those. For instance, why would the state want to put $500,000 into final design of a project if the feasibility of the project for a $60,000 study hadn't been completed?
And because right now they're planning from the time they get the money, how far before are they having to start this process?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that is an issue. We went out with an RFP in August. It was due in, I'm sorry, I believe it was early October.
September.
Oh, I'm sorry, it was due. The RFP went out in late July, and it was due mid-September. And then the funding generally becomes available July 1.
Okay.
So that would be on the order of 9 months or 8 months.
Okay. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So it's saying that you're projecting by 2013 the renewable energy grant fund will have displaced 6 million gallons of diesel fuel, and that's total. That's not 6 million a year.
By 2013, I'm sorry, I have to look at it a different way. Representative Peterson, yes, that will, by 2013, the program will be displacing approximately 3.5 million gallons per year. And if you, by the end of 13, if you add up the cumulative to date, I believe it is somewhere around 6.
And follow-up?
Follow-up, Reverend Peterson.
And so in many parts of the state, diesel fuel is selling for $6 a gallon by the time you get it delivered there. So we're talking significant savings besides the savings to the PCE fund. Also, there will be significant savings to local ratepayers and cooperatives and electric companies as well.
Representative Peterson, through the chair, I don't want to mischaracterize. One thing, much of the – this is a diesel equivalent, so a significant amount of natural gas is being displaced, and much of it on the rail belt, obviously. Right now, I think diesel fuel is going from somewhere between 350 to 550, depending for power fuel, because they get larger deliveries. Substantial savings, to be sure, but I didn't want to overstate it.
Okay, and just a statement: when I was at Penwar in Portland this summer, and we were talking about renewable energy, and I mentioned that we're putting $50 million a year in the renewable energy fund. I got some jaws dropping from other legislators from other states, and they thought they had misheard me when I said that. There's a significant amount of jealousy among other Western legislators wishing that their states had put together a renewable energy fund like this. So we're sort of taking the lead in this category.
Yeah. Representative Sadler, did you have a question?
Actually, I got a bulldog copy of your report to Alaskans, and on page 12 it talks about the diesel displacement. I think you just said, Peter, that it was either 6 or 8 million gallons by the end of the year. This says AE estimates by the end of 13, 44 projects will be complete, saving more than 10 million gallons of diesel annually. I don't know if that's a better number. That's what yours is, a better number, but that's kind of a discrepancy. Can you account for it?
I can. the difference here is this: that by the end of 13, in our report to you, we estimate diesel displacement by year, or diesel equivalent displacement, and we make the assumption that the savings or the displacement occurs the year after projects are completed. So what we know are for the years 2009 through 2011.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so there's a one-year lag. By the end of 2013, given all the rounds 1 through 4, we're expecting over 10 million beginning in 2014. So by the end of 2014, 10 plus million gallons equivalent.
Okay. Their estimates are not going to hold you. Sure. Did I hear him right?
Yeah. Right. Can I ask one question then? On the, you guys are, of course, this is something that you guys have done within the program. It's not something that we affect statutorily, but the doubling of the caps. How is that going to affect the amount given out or the amount that could be awarded? Will there be some program or some projects that potentially won't be eligible because a few other projects are now able to maximize what they have?
Mr. Chairman, it is a grant recommendation program, and so what we've provided is $43 million of recommended projects. I guess with respect to the caps, that's something that when we meet with the advisory committee, we kind of try before we send an RFA out to discuss whether in this last year the discussion was should we just lift the caps or should there be an adjustment to the caps. It's also something that we've discussed with them on should they be cumulative caps, should one applicant only receive should it be cumulatively or on a round-by-round basis? And so those are things that we have flexibility in the program to look at. And at this point, I believe we've landed on, after much discussion with the advisory committee, was it would be a cumulative cap was the concern. So that would be, at this point, no applicant, I think, for one particular project would be able to get more than $8 million cumulatively for that project.
Okay. And as for the actual, I guess, projects itself, well, no, I will go to public testimony. I'll leave that for later. I don't think there were any other questions, so we will go ahead and open up the public testimony. If you guys would just kind of stay on potential, if we have any questions that you guys might be able to that come up later that you might be able to answer, just be ready. Otherwise, we'll go ahead and move first to Chris Rose, who should be online.
Yes, Mr. Chair, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Please state your name as well as your affiliation and then give your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Chris Rose. I'm the Executive Director of Renewable Energy Alaska Project, or REAP. REAP is a statewide nonprofit coalition of about 79 organizations across the state, including rail belt utilities, smaller utilities, around the state businesses, some conservation and consumer groups, Alaska Native organizations, et cetera, who all work together to educate about renewable energy and advocate for its increased production. I'm testifying today in support of House Bill 250. I do serve on the seven-member Renewable Energy Fund Advisory Committee, but I'm speaking today on behalf of REAP. And again, as I mentioned, our primary goal at REAP is to increase the production of renewable energy in Alaska. We feel that's important because renewable energy will provide predictably priced energy in an era where we have more volatile fuel prices that seem to be trending up, particularly diesel fuel that most of rural Alaska is now depending on for heat, electricity, and transportation. I really do believe the Renewable Energy Gas Fund is operating quite smoothly after getting up and running, and the AEA is doing a good job of building the program up from scratch. And I think it's important to emphasize that it's been less than 4 years since House Bill 152 was passed in 2008 and signed into law, and that since then only three construction seasons have occurred, so 2009, 2010, and 2011. And I do believe also, as AEA has pointed out in their testimony, that the program's impact is definitely going to be increasing as more construction projects are completed and get online. I think, as mentioned, there's been 208 projects funded so far. Many, many of those were feasibility or reconnaissance or design projects. Only about half have been construction projects, and only about 21 projects have been completed. But as noted, so far, the cumulative savings have been about $7 million in fuel over the last 2.5 years, according to AEA, but that they're projecting that that's going to grow. One of the figures that I pulled out of the report that they handed out to the legislature last year was what's going to happen by 2016, and at that point, they're looking at the diesel equivalent savings of about 11.6 million gallons a year. So at that point, we really are looking at well over $20 million probably in savings to the communities that are beneficiaries of this program. I've also I'm just looking at a spreadsheet that was passed out to the advisory committee just on the construction schedule of those projects that are under construction, or in some way, we're looking at over $100 million leveraged from other sources of funding of the construction projects. So that's to answer a question that was posed earlier. There may have been a lot of other monies leveraged for design, feasibility and reconnaissance that I'm not seeing on this particular spreadsheet. I want to emphasize that it's important to increase the sun, or to extend the sunset date on this program this year so that we don't see an interruption of the program. AEA has noted that because there'd be no certainty that the program would even exist on July 1st, 2013, when any appropriation in 2013 would come to these, would come to AEA, that they would not intend to going on through with a round six next summer, so unless we reauthorize it now. So it's really important in order to not have all of those reconnaissance, feasibility, and design projects that are in pipeline, in order for them not to be basically stopped and put in limbo for a while, we need to go ahead and extend it this year. I do believe that our the renewable energy in general is going to play an increasing role in Alaska's future, not only in displacing the dollars that are going out of our communities right now to import fuel, but also as the state diversifies our industrial and service sectors. And I'd like to stress that certainty plays such a great role, a vital role in investment decisions that communities and utilities make, and that a long-term extension of the program really provides that kind of a certainty that we need. So finally, I would respectfully urge the members of the committee to pass the bill without further amendment. And I know that there's been discussion and questions about the third-party evaluation that is going on. My understanding is that by March we would only have a draft of the first part of that evaluation, which is on the process that AA is using, and we wouldn't have a final draft of the entire evaluation, which would include the impact, until after the session's over. And so I know there are folks who would like to potentially open it up for amendment now, but I think just because of the legislative session being so short, that if we get it extended now, we can certainly use the information that the evaluation is going to provide to make any statutory tweaks next session if we need to. So I want to thank the committee very much for the opportunity to testify, and I'll stay on the line in case there are any questions.
All right. Are there any questions for Mr. Rose? All right. Seeing none, I appreciate the testimony. Mr. Rose, you actually answered the final question I was holding off on giving. So thank you. Let's move now to Gene Terrio is also on the line from Fairbanks, Golden Valley. Mr. Terrio, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
I can. Please state your name and your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you for the opportunity. For the record, my name is Gene Terrio. I'm the Vice President of Resource Development at Golden Valley Electric Association. I'm pleased to have the opportunity today to testify in favor of House Bill 250. Since creation of the Renewable Energy Fund program, GVEA has been successful in securing a number of grants to assess, develop, and integrate renewable power for the benefit of interior residents. These funds have been used to develop waste heat recovery for space heat at our North Pole plant and construction of the state's largest solar water heating system for the Denali Education Center, amongst other projects. In addition, GVEA purchases power from two independent power producers who have also received REF support for the development of their electric generation plants. The availability of REF funds is often crucial for the initial investigation and development of energy projects. As any business decision, these initial costs are the most risky since the viability of the project has yet to be determined. This is often critical for smaller rural utilities that are struggling with high fuel costs yet have limited funds available to develop alternative sources of stable, lower-cost power. Even a utility as large as GVEA is able to benefit from this sharing of initial project risks. For example, although GVEA expended its own funds to evaluate the wind resource at Eva Creek near Healy, we used a $28,000 REF grant to determine if the power generated at that site could be integrated into our power mix at a reasonable cost. This was important to our members since they were interested in developing alternative and renewable energy sources, but not if it would drive the already high cost of power even higher. Based on the feasibility and integration information developed using state funds, the Eva Creek Wind Farm is now under construction and will be the largest non-hydro renewable energy project in the state of Alaska when it begins generating power next September or October. The final funding mix will be approximately 15% state funds and 85% funds generated by GVEA ratepayers. In addition to these successful projects, it is also important to point out that GVEA secured REF grants to investigate two potential sources of alternative and renewable power that were ultimately deemed to be impractical or uneconomic. These projects involved a reconnaissance study of the run-of-river hydro potential on the Nenana River and a hydro assessment on the Little Gersel River. While neither of these projects advanced beyond this initial evaluation, the information that was obtained is valuable as the state strives to develop as many renewable sources of power as possible to achieve the goal of generating 50% of its total electric needs from renewable and alternative sources by the year 2025. Thank you again for the opportunity to express our support for House Bill 250. Passage of this legislation this year will allow the program to continue without interruption. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm available to answer questions if you or the members have any.
Great. Any questions from the committee for Mr. Terrio? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Terrio, for that for your testimony.
Thank you.
I'd like to jump now down to, looks like Cordova, Clay Copeland. Are you there?
Yes, so thank you.
Clay, would you please put your name on the record and state your affiliation and then proceed with your testimony.
My name is Clay Copeland, the manager of Cordova Electric Cooperative. Appreciate the opportunity to testify to the committee. Cordova Electric is a recipient of renewable energy grant funds and wanted to support the program and the extension of this program for the benefits that it provides. On July 13th of 2011, about 6 months ago, we placed our Humpback Creek Hydroelectric project in service. That project was a roughly a one-third split between renewable energy grant funds, FEMA assistance, because we were rebuilding the project, and then Cordova Electric ratepayers. In those 6 months, despite the record low snowfall last year, we produced 1.5 million kilowatt hours of energy, or about 110,000 gallons of diesel fuel offset. The project will offset about 370,000 gallons a year of diesel on an average year. So it's already paying huge dividends for Cordova, and is actually helping us through these winter months. To speak to the program itself, I think the application process, the review process, and the award process are very appropriate. They're manageable by small utilities, but they're applicable even to the larger rail belt utilities, as has been testified earlier. Very transparent process. And the program is well administered by the Alaska Energy Authority. In our case, Doug Otta, was the hydroelectric program manager, and stayed in close touch, reviewed the monthly reports, followed up with questions, et cetera, to make sure he understood the progress and challenges during construction. Butch White and the folks in the grant administration office, very thorough and very timely in their review of invoices and providing feedback and that regard. So I think the program works very well. It's well administered, and I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be extended for at least another 5 years and continue to provide benefits back to the state of Alaska. And I can answer any questions.
Any questions from committee? I have one for you there, Clay. What percentage are you now using renewable there in your system?
Thank you, Co-Chair Pruitt. We've got we budgeted to be 80% hydroelectric generation this year, and I think that's because we built the Power Creek hydroelectric project and put that in service in 2002. That also was funded with state funding, half federal and half state funding. The debt service has been paid off on that project, and when I just looked at the year-end numbers here, with over $16 million in diesel fuel savings to Cordova since it went into service 10 years ago, the project cost was only $24 million. That was really the first project and the one that really prevented a disaster. But the most important match is the one we've had from our private sector. The fish coming onshore, Cordova was the fifth largest seafood delivery port in the country. And for a community of 2,200 people, it's pretty amazing. Our fisheries processing plants have invested over $20 million in additional equipment, bringing those fish onshore, processing, and generating sales tax revenue. Besides all the diesel fuel savings, we were able to reduce our base rates 13% from the Power Creek project. We actually have a future, and I'd really like to see this program extended so that other communities, one at a time, can assure their futures. This program is meaningful, and I really support seeing it extended.
And just a follow-up, how much did
the renewable grant fund here and the impact that it had in being able to help you fund your project, what would you say was probably the savings to your customers?
There's $8 million in two grants. We ran into some construction challenges, not unusual in Alaska. So when we saw that we needed additional funds, we asked for them in round three. That $8 million, really, to be honest, made proper construction of that project possible. The thing about hydro is it's a very large investment on the front end, but it pays dividends for a very long time. I kind of liken it to spending $20 million on an oil well that produces 370,000 gallons of diesel a year almost indefinitely. So it's designed for a 50-year project life. We'll probably extend it out to 100 years. 370,000 gallons of diesel fuel a year is $1.2 million worth of diesel. Last year we collected $8.3 million in revenue, and this year we budgeted to collect $7.2 million in revenue through the utility. So that looks like a 13% decrease in electric cost in Cordova across every rate class and to every member.
Okay, appreciate that. Well, thank you, Mr. Coplin. Is there any other questions for Ms. Coplin? All right, seeing none, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you. Appreciate the work you do.
Thank you. We'll move now to Walter Rose up in Nome. Mr. Rose, would you please, are you there first?
Yes, do you hear me okay?
We can hear you, yeah. Please state your name as well as your affiliation for us, and then proceed with your testimony.
Okay, my name is Walter Rose, and I am the energy specialist for Coweric Incorporated, a regional nonprofit tribal consortium serving the Bering Strait region of Western Alaska. I appreciate your time to hear my testimony today, which I am submitting on the behalf of the remote isolated native villages in our region. Today we are almost entirely dependent on diesel fuel and gasoline, costing an average of over $6 a gallon this year for electricity generation, space heating, and transportation. The Renewable Energy Grant Fund has begun to make a difference here, but there's still a long way to go. Coweric believes numerous beneficial projects still remain. Strategic energy planning during coming years will help identify and rank these projects. Extending the Renewable Energy Grant Fund will help communities move forward with the most viable. Coweric would like to thank the state of Alaska for the Renewable Energy Grant Fund to date. Coweric strongly supports legislation which extends and fully funds the Renewable Energy Grant Fund, including CS 250 Revision D, which extends the fund for 5 years at a recommended funding level of $50 million per year. Thank you for hearing my testimony, and I'll remain online to answer any questions.
All right. Anyone have any questions for Mr. Rose? Representative Foster.
Thank you. I just wanted to say I hope you all are staying warm up there and look forward to getting back home at some point here. So thank you for your testimony.
It's a little chilly up here, but yeah, we're staying warm. Any other questions?
I don't think there are any questions. I appreciate your testimony, and we'll see what we can do to extend this fund and help you guys out up there.
All right.
We'll move next to David Messier up in he's up in Fairbanks, the Yukon River Intertribal Watershed Council. Are you there, Dave?
I am. Can you guys hear me all right?
I can. Please state your name as well as your affiliation for us and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. My name is Dave Messier. I work with the Yukon River Intertribal Watershed Council here in Fairbanks, Alaska. We represent over 50 small native villages throughout the Yukon River Basin, all the way from Eagle towards the Canadian border down to Monick on the coast of the Bering Sea. And we just wanted to throw our support behind the extension of the Renewable Energy Grant Fund. We were awarded a renewable energy grant to do some hydrogenic work out in Ruby, and also the specific project that we had installed didn't meet with huge amounts of success. It was a great learning experience for the state, or for our organization as well, and I think we were great stewards of the state's resources in that project. Also just wanted to stress the fact that diesel for the communities that we work in anyway, just as Walter had said, it's really not the sustainable way towards the future. Someone had mentioned earlier that diesel was between $3.50 and $5.50 a gallon. Well, and then Walter said $6.50, and that's just the cost to get it up there. In Anacostia Pass, they'll get there tomorrow. They're selling diesel at $9.50 a gallon. In some of the communities, that's the going rate for people to heat their homes, and that's definitely not sustainable in the future. It's only going up. So just wanted to throw the support of the Yukon River Intertribal Watershed Council behind the extension of the project, and thank you guys for your time and consideration.
Yeah, thank you so much. Any questions for Mr. Messier? All right, well, I appreciate your testimony there. We'll move lastly to Lisa Herbert. She's also in Fairbanks. If you wouldn't mind, Lisa, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, if you'd please state your name as well as your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Through the chair, thank you for the opportunity. For the record, my name is Lisa Herbert, and I'm the executive director for the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. And I want to say first thank you for meeting with our Fairbanks members last week during our legislative fly-in. I think we met with almost all of you on this committee. The Chamber encourages the Alaska State Legislature and the Governor to support initiatives that lower the cost of energy in the interior, which is currently our number one legislative priority again this year. The high cost of energy has long been an issue in Alaska, specifically in the rural areas, but now has become an overwhelming problem here in Fairbanks for our businesses and families. We focus on this priority because, in short, costly energy is halting economic development and sustainment in our region. With severe temperatures, and this January being one of the coldest Januaries in recorded history, families and businesses are struggling to pay their heat, electric, and transportation bills. We're desperate for energy solutions. The Chamber does represent over 700 businesses and organizations, and we feel that the Renewable Energy Grant Fund is an initiative that can positively play a role in our energy future. By 2013, it is estimated that the Renewable Energy Grant Fund will have displaced 6 million gallons of diesel fuel statewide. And as many of you know, the interior's primary source is diesel and wood-burning stoves, both of which are negatively affecting our air quality issues and our non-attainment of PM2.5. Some of our members directly benefiting from the grant fund today include Golden Valley Electric Association, which you just heard from, Chena Hot Springs Resort, and Cold Climate Housing Research Center. Along with other initiatives such as weatherization programs and cold climate research, we feel the grant fund is a part of the progress in the right direction to solving our energy needs. Committee members, I thank you for the opportunity to speak today in support of House Bill 250.
All right. Any questions for Ms. Herbert? Well, I sure appreciate getting the chance to meet with you last week as well as your testimony today. That's everyone that's online. Is there anyone in the audience that's here for testimony? Seeing none, we will go ahead and close testimony. Any other conversation or discussion from the committee? All right. Seeing none, I would entertain a motion to move this bill.
Mr. Chair, I move that committee substitute for House Bill 250 Version D be moved from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
All right. Any objections? All right. Hearing none, House Energy CS HB 250 Version D has moved from committee. On that note, being that there is no other business before us today, we will be adjourning. We will not have a meeting on Thursday, as there's no other bills to at this point in time to hear. So the next meeting will probably be noticed for next Tuesday, but I'm not guaranteeing that. It'll be noticed, so you guys will see it. But it is 4:20, and we will go ahead and adjourn at this time. Thanks, guys.